Welcome back to the roundtable this morning. Danelle Padilla Peralta is one of millions of young undocumented men and women brought to the country as children. He's also a gifted scholar who made his way to some of the world's most elite schools. Peralta's new book is Undocumented, A Dominican Boy's Odyssey from a Homeless Shelter to the Ivy League. It recounts his journey from the New York City shelter system to the Ivy League. The book is published by Penguin Press, and we welcome Danelle Padilla Peralta to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Oh, my delight. Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. What was the idea? What did you ultimately, the story you wanted to tell and what you wanted to accomplish with looking back and writing the book?
So I had two ideas in mind when I sat down to write the book and when I began working on it in 2006 and 2007. So the first idea was to give a sense to readers of what it means to grow up undocumented, what it means to experience the difficulties daily, weekly, monthly that come about from not having legal paperwork to reside in the country. And that points in turn to a second and bigger issue, which is the need for comprehensive immigration reform, the need to repair our broken and dysfunctional immigration system. But the second motivation was to give an account of how I came of age and how I matured into a young adult who was committed to being a humanist, how the books I read shaped my perspective on life, and how reading can be so empowering. So those were the two major issues that drove my decision to write the book.
We have a, I guess, we hope, and we have a grand notion often, that that stories like yours can be so and can be certainly more common than they are. And I'm curious as to your take on that, that because I'm sure you would admit, by fact of your story and a book contract, that there are, that this is a rare case that you can come in and go through that shelter system and come out of the other side and on the best schools in this country.
Right. So, and in response to that and reflecting on that, I eventually came at two conclusions, which I think complement each other. So the first is that on one level, my experiences, as I write about them in the book, were exceptional. I was fortunate in that there were all kinds of doors open to me, and I was also fortunate in that I made plenty of contacts that down the road became immensely useful to me. But this also speaks to another issue, which is that for so many, these opportunities are denied or are in many ways obstructed because of this lack of documentation. The other thing, though, that also animates me and that really makes me passionate about the need to advocate for on behalf of immigrants is that there are many different ways of living what we call the American dream. And in fact, undocumented immigrants, whether or not they go to Ivies and then go and get their PhDs, are living these versions of the American dream. And we should honor that instead of setting up these impediments to obstruct their progress.
What are the impediments?
So the first and most substantive impediment is that being undocumented puts you in a state of permanent precariousness because you are vulnerable to being picked up and deported at any time. And the anxiety that this generates and the constant fear that it precipitates is an aspect of any undocumented immigrant's life, and this is something I talk about in the book. The second hurdle follows from the first. It has to do with the nature of our dysfunctional immigration system because the inability to secure documentation means that, among other things, you don't have a work authorization that allows you to secure steady employment. And so this consigns you effectively to being on the margins of the labor force and of U.S. society, even though undocumented immigrants in many cases take up jobs that Americans don't want. Nonetheless, when it comes time for these undocumented immigrants to receive the kind of support they need in the form of work authorization, this is denied to them. So these are two impediments, and there are many more.
In reading your story, which is remarkable, it does come down to you came into the city. Ultimately, your father had to go back, return to the Dominican Republic. Your mother stayed, but again, being undocumented, there were so many obstacles. You get evicted from your apartment. You go into the shelter system, and it's ultimately a volunteer at one of the shelter's libraries who sees that you have something and works with you. And I mean, that is so important, and we hope that happens more often. But also, you could look at it and say, wow, you got really lucky.
Yes, I got lucky in all kinds of ways, many ways that I don't even mention in the book, because there are only so many pages, right? And that really was a transformative, a seminal moment that I had the good fortune to come across this volunteer arts instructor, who then took a liking to me, and who then was willing to pour his own energy and time into making sure that I had access to these educational opportunities. But one of the things I'm also committed to, by virtue of the book I've written and the ideas I have for contributing to this conversation, is that we need to think very carefully about making sure that equal access to opportunities, educational and otherwise, is not simply a matter of luck. Right. So, in other words, we need to think very carefully about the kinds of comprehensive structural reforms in education, with the immigration system, with social mobility and the arrangements and design of our neighborhoods and communities that enable these kinds of stories to take place at a far more regular pace than they do.
You rose to the top of your class at the collegiate school on Manhattan's Upper West Side. You went to Princeton. Your immigration status was still in question at that point.
That's right. So when I was a junior and senior in high school and I began to think about applying to colleges, I realized that my lack of documentation would pose a major hurdle. And so when I confided my secret to my college guidance counselor, he recommended that I be honest about it, that I, when I made my mind up as to which college I applied to, inform that college. And I, for a moment, I thought that this was crazy. You know, I was at the time 16, and I said, well, why would I willingly share this secret with a university? Surely they're not going to admit me once they know that I'm undocumented. But honesty prevailed, and I went up to a Princeton admissions officer, and I explained my situation, and I asked the officer if my status would be held against me when and if I applied. And the officer said that it wouldn't. And I was emboldened enough by that answer to apply early decision to Princeton. When I went to Princeton, I was still undocumented, and it was in trying to sort out a future for myself near the tail end of my time at Princeton that I finally decided to come out publicly my senior year at Princeton as undocumented.
And when you say come out publicly, that was through a piece in the Wall Street Journal, correct?
That's right. Miriam Jordan, a Wall Street Journal reporter, wrote a very sensitive and thoughtful piece on my life story and on what I had experienced as an undocumented immigrant.
So you get an offer, you're coming out of Princeton, you get an offer of admission to the University of Oxford. You leave the United States to begin your graduate work, and you don't know if you can get back into the United States of America.
Yes. So because I had overstayed and because I had resided undocumented in the United States for so long, I was subject to what's called a 10-year bar, which meant that upon exiting the U.S., I would be denied reentry for 10 years for my previous immigration violation. So when I headed over to Oxford to begin my studies there, I did so in the knowledge that there was a strong likelihood I might not be able to return anytime soon. But again, I was fortunate in that I received an offer of employment as a research assistant from Princeton that enabled me to apply for a work visa. And with that work visa, I was also able to apply for a waiver that would allow the 10-year bar not to be applied to me on reentry. And so that allowed me to return to the United States.
You returned to the United States to get your PhD in classics from Stanford University last year. Now you're a Mellon Research Fellow in the Society of Fellows and lecturer in the Department of Classics at Columbia University. And as it stands now, from my understanding, still awaiting a decision on your request for a green card.
That's right. My longtime girlfriend and I got married in March. Awesome, awesome wedding. lots of partying. And we, not too long after, did what's called a concurrent filing. She filed on my behalf, and we put together this application for my permanent residency, my green card. But we are still waiting to hear from the Citizenship and Immigration Service.
So really, the story doesn't have an ending in that sense.
That's right. Stay tuned.
So do you can still consider yourself undocumented?
So So I have a legal status in the U.S. When I was at Stanford, I had a student visa status that allowed me to pursue my studies there. And once a student on a student visa completes his or her degree program, he or she is eligible for some time doing what's called post-completion OPT, meaning you get a temporary work authorization to work for a while after you graduate. And that's the work authorization I've employed in order to work at Columbia. But that does run out. It will run out by the end of September. So the Citizenship and Immigration Service, we are hoping, will rule on the merits of our permanent residency application before then.
So being undocumented, being a part of this system, what do you make? And I'm curious as to what do you think we are missing in our debate when it comes to immigration in this country?
So I think we're missing several things in the debate. The first is sensitivity to what undocumented immigrants have already accomplished and will continue to accomplish. Because there's a tendency, at least in the sort of, in the very loud diatribe form of, say, a Mr. Trump, to pathologize undocumented immigrants. And of course, most people would not take Trump's statements at face value, but this tendency to pathologize the undocumented is very real. And so one of the things that we're missing in the debate, as the debate is currently taking place, is understanding, a very rich and deep understanding of the many things that undocumented immigrants already contribute to U.S. society. We're also missing, because of the nature of our dysfunctional immigration system, any opportunity to facilitate the contributions that are made by these immigrants such that they are empowered to do even more for American society. And the last thing we're missing, and this is something that as a historian I am very sensitive to, is a historical context that situates our contemporary xenophobic sentiment with a view to the long history of U.S. Anti-immigration zealotry. So thinking about why it was, for example, that Irish immigrants or Italian immigrants were discriminated against and suffered by virtue of a dysfunctional immigration system, this is very much a part of how we should be talking about contemporary immigration.
In your studies, and obviously great accomplishments, what is your field of study, and how much of your story is a part of what you do?
So I, in my professional work, focus on several things, some of which are more loosely connected than others. So my main work is concentrated on the social and cultural history of the Roman Republican Empire. I'm interested in religion, and I do a lot of writing on religious issues in the Roman Republican Empire, but I'm also interested in mobility, how people got around the ancient Mediterranean. And in a very real way, I don't come about that interest in mobility innocently. It's in part because I've experienced the difficulties of being an immigrant that I am very attuned to the importance of studying mobility in the ancient world. The other thing I study, and that I've been spending an increasing amount of time on recently, is how the classical past, how the Greek and Roman world influences the contemporary present, continues to shape the contemporary present. And I look at that in two contexts. I look at U.S. context and how Americans consume, digest, think about the classical world. And I also look at Latin American context, how Dominicans think about the Greek and Roman world. And in those ways, my experiences as a classicist intersect with my experiences as a Dominican American.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Undocumented, A Dominican Boy's Odyssey from a Homeless Shelter to the Ivy League. It is published by Penguin Press. Danel Padilla-Peralta, I thank you very much for being with us this morning and for sharing your story. Best of luck with the book.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a delight to be on. Thanks again.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Undocumented by Danel Padilla-Peralta. It's published by Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.